Go long! Go long!
Sometimes longer isn't better. So if you're looking for a fantasy NFL game that doesn't last all season, try Paddy Power Fantasy. Every game week is a season in itself. Try it for free on our super short, super free contest on this Sunday's 6pm games. The top 1,500 customers in the contest win a prize with £200 for first place. Search Paddy Power Fantasy to pick your team.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Good to have you with us. Gab Marcotti in the house this Friday as we get set for one of the biggest games of the season, the Cowboys-Eagles, which should decide the NFC East. And guess what? Marcotti is a major Eagles fan, and I'm underlining major in a big red pen. So get ready for a white knuckle ride with one of the great journalists in world football, talking about the other football and his beloved Philadelphia Eagles. Enjoy. Gab, I'd say welcome to ESPN HQ, as we often do with our Friday guests, but you know these neck of the woods pretty well.
Yeah, I sort of live here, so.
Do you actually live here? Or?
Just about. I'm just down the road, but this is, yes, I will have been here 4 out of the last 5 days, so.
Love it. You're a company man.
I am. Representing. Look. Wait. Oh, no. I left my rucksack in the other room. But it is, I do have an official ESPN rucksack.
Love it.
Which you can get at the ESPN store. promo code GAB2020 and you'll get 10% off.
You're an affiliate. I love that. Well, welcome to the show. You and I go back a fair bit.
Mm.
In fact, I was remembering the first time we properly worked together. Telling the story the other day. You might not remember this, but it's one of my favorite stories. So I first worked at the ESPN back in 2010, 11, right? 12, around then. And we were doing a lot of studio football and a lot of European studio football. Mm. And I would normally do the Bundesliga with Rafa, and you would do Serie A with Jimbo most of the time.
Yes.
Right? But sometimes we'd mix and match if people were away,
do.
As you do. So we first got matched together for a Juventus game. It's a kind of early kickoff, right, in that ESPN studio. And I remember the producer said to me, Nat, this isn't like the Bundesliga, where you kick off with military precision in the Bundesliga. In Serie A, they're a little bit looser. They're a bit more relaxed. So we're going to have to feel it a little bit, and we might not realize until the last minute, oh, they're about to kick off, depending on the pictures we get. So you're just going to roll with Gab, and I'll let you know. So that's exactly what happened. We were just chatting away and having a very nice pregame chat and rolling. And then suddenly, slightly panicked, producer Mario saying, Nat, we got to go. So I gave you what I thought was the kind of wind-up, and you carried on talking, and I kind of was a little bit more exaggerated with it. And for the benefit of our podcast listeners who can't see, I'm kind of moving my head a lot more, and I started winking more and more and more.
I do not recollect this.
So you looked at me more of a stranger, but you carried on talking. You didn't miss a beat. Textbook pro.
No, I think I remember. Yeah. I think that's why I said, like, oh, God, they told me Nat is the one with the facial tips.
This is what you said to me. You said, eventually I had to dive in and go, Gab, I've got to cut you off there because the game is about to kick off. More from Gab Marcotti at halftime, but get ready for Juventus Parma or whatever the game was. And we threw to the comms and we're underway. And you just leant over to me and said, Nat, man, I'm so sorry. You were trying to wind me up. I thought you had a twitch.
Yes, because that's exactly how I sound. You know,
like, I thought that was quite a good Marcotti.
That's not, I sound nothing like that.
A lot of our listeners who, unsurprisingly, are NFL fans have asked the question, no, you're coming on the show. Are you American?
No.
So why the American accent? Why the love of the Philadelphia Eagles?
So the accent, I always wondered, like, what's the alternative? Hmm. Because I should be speaking like in Italian, like in the advertisement for the Dolmio, yeah? Because we all talk like that in Italy.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the reason I have this accent is simple. I was born in Italy at the age of 3, started moving around the world. I lived a little bit in the US, a little bit in Japan, a little bit in Germany. It was a lot of fun, huh? A little bit in Poland, a little bit here. And I always attended American schools, and then I went to university in America and graduate school in America, hence my accent. And the Eagles thing comes from, so I'd follow the NFL as a sort of at a distance, you know, when I was very young, I lived in Chicago. So like 1985, like it was hard not to get into, not get into that and stuff. But, you know, when immediately before going there, I lived here in London, and obviously I was very into football. And then I moved to the States, and all of a sudden I kind of see like, and I'm living in Philadelphia, and I see the same patterns to football, to the NFL there. I mean, in the way the city lived it, that people had over here. In other words, you know, you play your game on the weekend, and then Monday and Tuesday, you're kind of reflecting back, and then Wednesday, you start looking ahead to your opponent. And, you know, relative to other American sports, which I enjoy watching, but, you know, 82 games in basketball, 162 games in baseball, you know, just one after the other, like there, you don't have that buildup. And what I loved and came to appreciate, because it also educated me more as a fan, was the fact that, you could spend that time understanding the game better, thinking about it better, appreciating the game better, and, you know, at the weekend. And, you know, and that mirrored what we had in football over here. And there were two other factors which kind of had me fall in love almost immediately with the Eagles. One was that on Sundays, you know, you would wake up and you would just see all these people walking around in Eagles gear. And I know it's an absolute cliche about sort of sports cutting across socioeconomic classes and whatnot, but you saw this after the Super Bowl, right? You had, you know, hedge fund managers with their private planes, and, you know, you had people coming out of crack houses, and you had nuns, and you had cops, and every single kind of race, you know, in a society that's actually in many ways more polarized. This is something where at least, you know, at least as far as the Eagles are concerned, but I imagine it's the same, especially in, you know, in the Northeast of the United States, maybe in Chicago, maybe also in Cleveland, places like that. You've got something that really does give a real sense of community. That was huge. And then the other thing that was huge too was, you know, it was 1991, and you had that, when I moved to Philadelphia, and that was Randall, and that was that unbelievable defense, you know, Wes Hopkins, Andre Waters, Eric Allen, Jerome Brown, Reggie White, Clyde Simmons, Byron Evans, Seth Joyner, Willie Thomas, I'm going to go through the whole team, Golick, I mean, you know, Pitts, that was by Herschel Walker.
It's Buddy Ryan era, coaching.
It was the end of the Buddy Ryan, the end of the Buddy Ryan era, and the start of the Rich Kotite era, sadly. But it was, you know, it was incredible. Like, the city stopped. And that was also the year that Randall always seemed to get injured early in the season. And they had all these random quarterbacks that came in. And then finally they had Jim McMahon. And Jim McMahon, of course, had been the quarterback in 1985 of the Bears. And Jim McMahon was, when you talk about somebody who's literally like, I mean, he shouldn't be allowed out of the Lost house at that life. Stage.
Yeah.
Everything, he was just broken. Like, he had broken every, you know, he could hardly, there was basically like, there was a stretch, one season where he basically he went like 6 weeks where he didn't take a single snap in practice because he literally couldn't move. And then he's out there, and it didn't matter because the defense was so awesome that he didn't really have to do anything other than sort of hand the ball off. And then Randall would come back. You know, Randall's a plastic man. And, you know, this is the year after what I think is the greatest play in the history. Right? It's not the greatest play, obviously, in the history of the Eagles, because it would have been last year. But at the time that Monday Night Football, against the Bills, when, you know, you remember Bruce Smith, who's just this monster, right? He's the size of a building, right? And he's so fast, and he goes in and he's about to tackle Randall for a safety in the end zone. And there is no possible way that Randall can know he was there, except Bruce Smith is so big that he blocks out the sun. And I like to think he sees a shadow and he says, it's got to be Bruce Smith. Nobody else could have gotten behind me. And he ducks down and Bruce Smith goes over him. And then he goes and he throws the ball like 80 yards, I think, to Freddie Barnett. And I mean, that sealed it for me, you know, but that was before I got there, but you know, that was one of the highlight played over and over and over again. So that got me on board.
And that type of escapology that you referenced with Randall Cunningham, of course, we're seeing the 2019 iterations now with a number of players, Lamar, of course, and Deshaun Watson, maybe in particular, I think, somehow keeping plays alive when they just shouldn't be kept alive.
Yeah. And I think there's kind of an eternal sort of debate about this, whether it is a good thing to do, because when you keep the play alive like that, or, you know, you can do what Tom Brady does, which is just, oh, I'll just fall over so I don't get hurt. Or actually, no, let me just fall over so I get the roughing the passer call because somebody breathes on me.
His supporters would suggest he just shifts half a step to this either side to keep things rolling. Yeah,
his supporters can do one. But But I mean, I always wonder, but like, I worry about this. You know, I saw it with our own quarterback, with Carson Wentz, right? I know he's big and everything, but you know, the other dudes are bigger and many of them. And when you escape, when you create something out of nothing, look, he did it last week. I'm very grateful, but I always kind of like, oh my God, what if you get hurt? You know, that's what terrifies
sure.
you, you know?
Sure.
So I guess it's about getting a balance right. I don't know as, it's interesting because you hear about how, you know, sort of analytics has come in big time in football and, you know, they have like a chart of when to go to it and fourth down and whatever, all this other stuff. But what do you tell your quarterback? Like knowing when to scramble, when to go for that extra yard, that's got to be something that I think is so difficult. And you have to make that decision in a split second and you're a competitor. I'm just glad I'm just a fan. I can just sit this. Unlike my day job, you know, I have absolutely no professional involvement and it's an escape for me as well.
Yeah, I bet. So NFL football at Christmas, Saturday games come into play. We're going to pick all the games a little bit later on and obviously key in quite heavily on the small matter, the Eagles Cowboys Saturday games. And then you've got, I did the maths in 9 days, the season gets sorted out, right? So you know who's made the playoffs. And then you have Black Monday straight after the final game of the season when it's say goodnight Gracie to quite a few coaches, some more obviously than others, right? So it looks pretty clear that, for example, Doug Marrone's going to go. Coughlin out in the last 24 hours. It looks like Marrone will be out the door at Jacksonville as well. Jason. Well,
why is Coughlin still around?
What do you mean? In football generally?
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
It's horrendous. I mean, horrendous football to watch. Not a pleasant person.
Successful.
When?
Well, he won two Super Bowls with the Giants.
When Eli was young.
Yeah.
And one of them was a stupid play off the helmet. But like, it's down to him?
There were a lot of lucky. You could argue a lot of teams had lucky breaks.
Yeah, I don't like him.
Okay.
But he's not my least favorite coach in the NFL.
I
think you were about to mention him.
Jason Garrett.
Oh, my God.
So basically any NFC East coach you dislike other than an Eagles coach.
Well, I like Doug. Mm. Doug Peterson, obviously. Yeah. But yeah. No, okay, so no, with Garrett, it's different, right? So
what is it about Garrett you don't like?
Well, Garrett's a Princeton guy, which, you know, my alma mater, Penn. Mm. We competed with Princeton for the coveted Ivy League title. And don't laugh, there are Ivy League players in the NFL. Not many over the years.
Fitz is an Ivy League player, right?
He is one, that's right. He went to Harvard. You had the I'm blanking on his name. He was really good. The went to Columbia. He's retired now. Marcellus
Wallace?
Is that the guy I'm thinking? Like went to
Bennett.
Bennett. One of those dudes went to Columbia. They hadn't won a game for like a million years. I think they hadn't won a game for, there's a great podcast telling this guy's whole story about how like he could have gone to Stanford or.
Oh, Marcellus Wiley.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
But he was a serious NFL player. Yeah, he wasn't right. He wasn't like Jay Fiedler or whatever, right? Or Keith Elias, you know.
Fitz is a serious NFL player. Anyway, so.
No, yes, he is. But Fitz is a quarterback.
Yes.
You know, that's slightly different, okay. Right? You know, and he's super smart and whatever, and he beat us this year somehow.
Is there anything better in the NFL right now than watching Fitz scramble for a 10-yard gain?
I don't know how he does it. How he does it at his age. I mean, I think that is the element of brains, of timing, of, you know, people can say, oh, but you know, he's maniacal about how he looks after that. If this guy were a natural born athlete, he would not have gone to play football at Harvard. He simply wouldn't, right? He would have gotten the same quality of education at Stanford and become, you know, if he was that good. I have so much respect for him because he eked out a career. And it's interesting because I mentioned Jay Fiedler before who played briefly and, Jay Fiedler was a freak athlete by Ivy League standards, and he was drafted. You probably know better than me what kind of career he had in the NFL. He hung around for a while.
He had a cup of coffee.
He held a clipboard and whatever.
Yeah.
But that guy had physical gifts that I think Fitzpatrick didn't have. And look, when I say like didn't, it's all relative, right? I mean, compared to the top 0.1% of the population.
Yeah.
But to be able to do that for so long with so many different teams, it just shows you how these guys, even the ones that we think aren't super smart, you know, like Roethlisberger or Cam Newton, they're probably a lot smarter than most of us. Mm. You know, I think that's the reality, you know, to be able to do this.
What they've got to learn. It's absolutely right.
It's, I mean, this is the thing which always, sorry if I digress here a little bit, but
go with it.
And I'll wind it back a little bit to football, right? One of the enduring thing when you speak to the football they play in Europe, one of the enduring things that you get from a lot of coaches, well, you don't want to complicate things for them. You don't want to give them too much to think about, blah, 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 right? This is how they speak to their footballers, right? You know, and you get a footballer with an A level, he's a genius, you know, you get Frank Lampard and he's like, you know, the entire wisdom of humanity in one man's brain. I know, exactly. No, man, he is a super smart guy, but these guys, you've got defensive backs in college, you know, who have trouble writing their names, who can memorize 120 page playbooks.
Sure.
And I just think, what if the other football actually learned a little bit from them? What if you actually made these people study, right? What if we actually sat down with the people who play FIFA football, for lack of a better word, and said, hey guys, you're very good, but you can learn all these things, right? Those guys do it. They're not necessarily all smarter than you. And that's what blows me away.
Yeah, you talk to players, in particular the Brits that are out there at the moment, who it's particularly acute because they are in most cases transitioning. So Christian Wade, Christian Scotland-Williamson, we were chatting to Christian about his first year on the practice squad and how he had gone in with his eyes wide open, knowing the complexity of learning the playbook and acclimatizing to a brand new sport as well. He knew it was going to be a challenge, but he said, you have no idea just how much information you have to understand and quickly. And if you make a mistake, there are serious consequences. So it's not to be underestimated in most positions, and obviously some more than others, quarterback, most obviously, but you know, they're playing tight end and that is not a straightforward position. No. Certainly if you are a rugby player that's played one sport all your life and you have to learn that in 8 weeks flat or whatever it is. So it's not to be underestimated, that type of intelligence, but how would that translate to football, to European football? What would be the equivalent in introducing, what are you saying, studying analytics more, studying?
No, I mean, I think, well, one obvious thing that you could probably borrow is patterns of play, right? So there are patterns of play in the other football, which are generally pretty evident, and they'll depend on the other team. That's something that you could get a lot more sophisticated with, that both in possession and then out of possession.
Using film rooms more, for example. So
absolutely, yeah. You could also study a lot more. I mean, I know several NFL teams have a guy whose job it is to study the officiating crew that weekend. And know what kind of stuff they call, what kind of stuff they don't call, their tendencies and so on. I know, again, in Europe, in European football, it's happened, I think there's maybe two or three clubs that consult with ex-referees. Mm. But study the referee, know what he's going to call. You know, not just like, you know, the pre-match in the dressing room, oh, well, you know, this is a strict referee, gives a lot of call. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff you knew. Study your opponent, your opponent's tendencies. I think people would be surprised how little time people actually spend doing that.
And full stop at the facility, right? If you compare like for like there, that an NFL player during the season is, and again, depends on the position, but is in team meetings a lot of the day, right, as well as training and practice. They're there for a good chunk of time every day. Whereas, again, without generalizing too much, you'll know more than me on this one, European players, not so much.
You're talking... I mean, part of the concern was, you know, big concern with overtraining and they play twice a week and travel. But yeah, generally, if, you know, I mean, unless you're injured and need treatment, it's an hour and a half training session and then you hop in the car and go home, take a nap and then play golf or do whatever it is you do. And there isn't that much of the meetings, even the video analysis sessions. You know, when Louis van Gaal was at Manchester United, like, people complained that it was too boring, you know, and I'm like, you know, dude, like, you make $4 million a year and you can't sit there for 20 minutes. I don't know, it's not fun listening to Louis van Gaal, but you know, you can't sit there and look at something that's going to make you better. It's going to help your team win and help you become more successful and make more money.
What they need, Gab, is for you to do those team meetings with your Italian accent.
Exactly. Maybe they'll be watching it. No, but I just feel like there's a whole untapped world to that. Mm. That you can go and crack it with intelligence. And you notice it too with, you know, you get certain managers who wax lyrical about, you know, the intelligent player who times his run perfectly, you know, this Xabi Alonso, Lampard, whatever. And yeah, sometimes it's by accident, but a lot of it is by design. I mean, yeah, Frank Lampard was very, very intelligent footballer, but it's just, this stuff didn't just come instinctively to him. He might have been able to process what he saw before, but if you sat him down and you could, you know, a lot, cause what I'm saying is this stuff is learnable, you know, and it's just not something that football clubs want to do because they're nowhere near as progressive as they think they are.
Do you think that'll change? Because there are a number of quite visible managers in the game that are very open-minded to learning from other sports. So most notably from my experience at the Minnesota Super Bowl, you'll remember it fondly, Southgate was out there and I sat down with him. We did a chat and before we started rolling, he noticed a book I had on the desk because we were on Radio Row. So he came and was doing the rounds there. He noticed I had a David Halberstam book and he said straight off the bat, oh, Halberstam, what's that book like? I haven't read that one, but I've read this. And he knew who Halberstam was, had read Halberstam, wasn't blagging it, and supported that, substantiated that with the subsequent interview, which was more than just paying the lip service of an England manager. I'm here learning and I'm meeting this person and this person in a superficial way. He was substantiating what he was learning and what he was taking from not just the NFL, but NBA. There was a coaching conference out there, primarily North American minds in the room, and he was taking a lot from it. And he was talking specifically about positional, enhancing positional coaching to the next level and some of the other things you've been talking about. So presumably, even if Southgate is a front runner in that respect, most other organizations, because of the money involved and nothing else, will catch up, won't they? We'll see this happening gradually, and then eventually it will be widespread.
You would think so. But the thing is, people have been talking about this for a long time. I remember years ago, Mike Holmgren, after he won the Super Bowl, I think he either came over or a bunch of Premier League managers all went to meet him, and they all talked about everything they learned, and that's 15 years ago. Like, nothing's actually changed, I think. You know, ultimately the complaint from a lot of managers is they get very little time with their players and they complain that they just don't have time. And again, I don't know if it's set up. I mean, you're right. And, you know, in the NFL, it's like a job. Like they actually show up at the training facility and they're there for 10 or 12 hours. Yeah. And, you know, but for whatever reason, that doesn't translate into football. Maybe they don't think the marginal gains, to use a word, are worth it. Southgate's an interesting example. If it is true that he's implementing all these things, I'd love to see him coach a club team. Because the reality was, with a national team, you know, you don't have the opportunities to go and do that because you see these guys once every couple of months.
Yeah.
I think that there's a whole sphere there. And, you know, when people go and sort of disparage, professional, NFL players or even top college players as just, you know, bunch of roidy meatheads. No, there's a ton of knowledge, a ton of brains. And that is one of the things that I really find fascinating about it. All these details going in there. And then you've got the wild variable that you said, the escapism, the one tiny mistake and the knock on effects it'll have. And that I think is for me part of the appeal. There's many, many other reasons it's appealing to me.
All right, Gab, time to get into the weekend's games and pick them. We've obviously got to start with Cowboys-Eagles, right? Which is being billed as crunch time, of course, not so clear cut, because as we were talking about and as you were pointing out before we started rolling, the Eagles can win and still not make the playoffs.
Yes, if we lose the following week and Dallas wins, then Dallas have the tiebreaker over us, and then, you know, they'll be the ones getting into the playoffs at 8-8, something to be proud of.
How do you feel about that? About teams? 8-8 is a perfect example. There are Carolina a few seasons back, even worse than that, right? 7-8-1, I think they were. Teams
Well, in Seattle, what didn't they have a horrendous record?
7-9, maybe?
Yeah.
Anyway, team, there's a precedent here of teams winning the division with, at best, a 500 record. Should that be allowed? Are you okay with that? Should essentially, if a team wins a division but doesn't post a winning record, they're out of the frame and the team with the next best winning record takes the spot?
I'm okay with the system as it is because obviously it allows us, benefits us right now. No, but also, but you know, the shoe was on the other foot for a long time. The NFC East was a very good division sure. for a very, very long time. And, you know, you had situations where teams would win 10 games and not get in. So
it evens out in the long run.
It evens out. I think it also makes for a bit of a geographical distribution as well. And look, in the end, it's the Super Bowl champion, which is what it's about, will get to the playoffs another way, right? If you can't win your division, you know, if you can't win your division and you can't be a good wild card, right, then you probably won't win the Super Bowl. So I don't care. I would rather my birds get in the playoffs.
Well, are they going to get into the playoffs? Let's get into this game. And the season as a whole so far for Philly has been... Well, what has it been like for a super Philly fan like you? Is it, from the outside looking in, it must be quite frustrating, but then I guess there's got to be a certain pragmatism that injuries, in particular in the receiving core. And you mentioned Carson Wentz earlier on and talking about quarterbacks and risking injury. Has he been the same since he's come back from his injury, do you think?
I think physically he's been the same. I think he's very conscious of, you know, why he got injured and how he got injured. And, you know, and then coming back in and playing with an ACL and whatever, you know. So he's gone through that natural transition of saying, I'm a lot more valuable to this. I should slide and whatever. I also think, you know, that there's a whole movement. They call it the LTTB community, the Let the Bronco Buck community, right? Which Ike Reese, who's a local broadcaster in Philadelphia, former Eagles special team players and linebacker, and he's kind of started this as like there's an argument. Like a lot of times it feels like he has the handbrake on, and which is fine when everybody's fit, right? If DeSean Jackson's there spreading it, and if Jeffrey's not being a baby, and Aguilar especially isn't dropping the ball, then that's all right, you know. Then just stay in the pocket. Be smart, yeah, do the Brady thing, fall over, whatever. but we're not there. And so it's one of those situations where he needs to take more of it onto himself. Because, you know, last week we're all like, oh look, Greg Ward's actually pretty good and we never noticed. And all that time that, you know, we played the Eagles have this ridiculous guy named Mac Hollins. And this happens in every sport. There's these guys who are I don't say he's terrible because he's not, but there's these guys that coaches like because they do what they're supposed to do. So Mac Hollins runs really good routes.
You'll be careful apparently. What you say about Mac Hollins, isn't it? Because when he came over for a promo trip to London, he took time to do the floss with my kids. And so he's a good guy in my book. I won't have a word said against him.
He taught your kids how to floss.
He's dental
really good,
flossing.
He's got really good teeth. Is that what you're saying?
Not the dental ton of flossing. You know the floss. Gab, we can get you to floss it a bit.
Hey. I'm sure he's a great guy.
Yeah.
But this guy never catches a pass because he never throws to him, presumably because he never gets open and he never gets on the field. And then you got a guy like Greg Ward, right? And so again, that's another thing who comes in and plays really, really well. Mm. So it's not a knock on Mac Hollins, you know, well done. But you know, when you're kind of taking up space and then all of a sudden you move and the other dude makes a difference, we've had injuries there. Obviously Howard's injury has been a big one because I always feel like Miles Sanders is about to get injured. Mm. He never does, knock on wood. Mm. And I know he's well rested all those years backing up Saquon at Penn State.
Sure.
But.
And that rest is a really good point. I mean, not just long term, and I know you're being facetious, but even going into this season, at this stage of the season, I should say, you've got relatively fresh running back core, and you're going to have to lean on them pretty heavily, right? It's going to be a combination. If you're going to get it done, certainly against Dallas, it's going to be the ground game, and it's going to be the tight ends, because really, he hasn't got anywhere else to go.
Well, you know, I'm sure everybody's heard the story by now, but in not the last game, the game before, but McCown, the 47-year-old backup quarterback put on his helmet and he was going to go out there as a wide receiver and run routes. Now, he's got the mobility of a building and he's 100 million years old. And this is, we had no receivers left.
Yeah.
And you're going to go and send this dude out there because, you know, he's smart and he knows how to run a, I guess he can catch a ball. So like, so presumably you have to kind of, he's a body, right? He knows how to run a route. And if he's just standing there and he's, then you, the other team has to send somebody in the general vicinity, right? That was, but that is how that, I mean, that is how disastrous the situation was with the wide receivers. I think what's really hurt us is, I mean, this year the secondary's been better. And I think, that's helped, our defensive line. But I think we have to talk about the fact that, you know, we have, in my opinion, one of the three greatest defensive players in the league in Fletcher Cox. And he's been decidedly mediocre this year. And a lot of it, we were so excited because, you know, we'd signed Malik Jackson. Of course, then dude gets hurt and we thought, oh my God, we've got these two monsters in the middle. You know, they won't be able to triple team Fletcher, but now they're triple teaming him and he's not getting it done. I think that's really hurt us as well.
Just go back to the secondary a minute. Is it improving? Because statistically, and I know this stats can be misleading as we know, but 18 touchdown passes on corners this season, which is the second most in the NFL. And again, I know there's been injury issues there, which probably applies to why that's so high. The passer ratings against quarterbacks when targeted, 107.9. That's according to Pro Football Focus, the stats coming from there. So it has been a weak link in Philly for a while. I'm hearing talk of it's an improving unit. It's improving at the right time. You said, oh, the secondary's performing better. So
I think the last four or five games, I think they haven't been the problem the way they have been before.
Right.
Look, I'm not a Darby fan. Mm. I'm one of those fools who still thinks that Sidney Jones can be what he was supposed to be before he got injured, but now I'm coming around the idea that
ship
the dude's done. Mm. You know, but I believe in Jalen Mills. When he's there, we're better. And I love the enthusiasm he brings. Obviously, Malcolm is untouchable. Avante Maddox, you know, is a good player. So, yeah, I think those guys can at least give our rushers a chance to get to the quarterback. Yeah. And that's all you can ask for.
Which is always important, could be critical this game because rumblings that Dak Prescott is not fit, and most NFL players at this stage of the season are not fit, but to the degree where there's a big question mark over his fitness going into this game. So that's presumably going to be one of the core plans early doors is to get some hits on him. Obviously you want to get to him and do more than that, but even just getting in his face, hurrying him and hassling him because it's going to be a pretty frisky crowd, I'd imagine, on Sunday. And there is, I think, genuine concern from the Dallas camp that he's not right.
To me, a lot of those guys are just a bunch of devious liars, so I don't know what to believe. I'm going to assume that the real Prescott is out there. I've heard that as well.
Spinning it.
I wouldn't be surprised, right? I mean, that's kind of how they roll, right? Sure, they're sneaky. But look, I mean, the guy who scares me is Elliott. I mean, if you know, as long as Prescott can take the snap and just hand it to him, then we need to stop Elliott and make Prescott throw it. And
he's been, for the majority of the season, not the player that we know he can be, but looked very, very different against the Rams last week. And let's use him as an example of...
Well, but he had all that nonsense, though, in preseason, didn't he?
Getting the deal done.
Yeah, and going to Mexico and whatever. Yeah. And these things affect you, right?
Sure. But is it... And this is the book on Jason Garrett, your friend, that he's got this abundance of talent around him and these riches around him, and there's a real problem when a Dallas team that is this stacked is 500, then it has to be on the head coach. And I know you're not a Garrett fan, but is that a little bit harsh?
He's been there twice. I feel like that guy's been there like forever.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the players. You got what else you want? You even got the referee for this because as we were talking before, Tony Corrente.
Let's get into let's park Corrente for a minute because I know you want to talk about him. On the Cowboys, what about pressure then and how much the factor that's going to be in this game? Because is there a sense that there is more pressure because of all the hullabaloo that surrounds the Cowboys anyway? this season in particular, Garrett's a dead man walking, all of this talk. Is there going to be more pressure on the Cowboys on Sunday night, do you think?
Well, I mean, if they want to see Garrett gone, then maybe not.
Quite a lot of Cowboys fans would
I don't know. Like, that, right? I struggle with Cowboys fans. You know,
surprise me. Yeah.
Everybody's got rivalries, right? If you're, my problem isn't with Cowboys fans who are from Dallas or even from most of Texas, because you know what? It's your local team. You support them. That's fine. I think it's slightly pathetic that when they're bad, you don't go to that stupid stadium with a giant screen. That's because you're a bunch of saddos, because I think, you know, you should still show up. You know, there's only 8 games a year. It's not the massive demand, right? But whatever. Y'all got other things going on. That's fine. It's all the bandwagon jumpers from the rest of the country.
America's team guy.
But this is what really, really bugs me, because I can live with it if you do it because you love a player, right? You know, ooh, I've never been to Michigan, but oh, I watched Barry Sanders play, and so I became a Detroit Lion, and I tattooed Calvin Johnson's, you know, like head on my back and whatever, right? That's fine.
Have you got any ink, guy?
But no, I don't. I don't have football related ink. Okay. But
football related ink.
But when it comes to,
oh, it's gone.
Can we just go from that bit where you just asked that last question?
I need to keep filming it. Do you put these out, or are these for Freddie's collection?
Absolutely. Go out.
Okay.
All
right.
Yeah. Okay. It's the last one we're filming, and then.
No, I don't want to be judgmental about what Freddie does in his free time. But.
All right. Thank you. The last question I asked Gab was, does he have any ink? So do you want to pick up from there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you have any ink, Gab?
Not NFL related ink.
ESPN, but, company man related.
Exactly.
Cowboys fans from, so you were saying Detroit Lions fans.
I get it. This is a very, there's one of the things that makes America maybe perhaps a little bit different from football in Europe, in that, you know, you get it, especially in the NBA, right? Oh, I love this player, so then I'll follow him around. And I get how like a great player might have made you, you know, the great Buffalo Bills team, yeah. You know, maybe not from Buffalo, whatever. But Jesus, the Cowboys, man. Like, there are Cowboys fans who became Cowboys fans when they were bad, really bad. Mm. And they just stuck with it. And they're all over. And this is what bugs me about it. It just doesn't feel
authentic.
Correct.
But is it okay if you're picking a team?
It's okay if you're from there and you have ties to there, okay? But it's not okay otherwise.
What if you're a part of America that doesn't have an NFL team? And particularly, as you say, if you're picking a team that isn't very good at the time. So the Cowboys are a big team. They're a rich team. But they've had periods where, like most NFL teams, they haven't been very good. It's okay then, as opposed to backing them when they're winning Super Bowls.
It's more okay if you're from, you know, if you're from North Dakota, you're like, oh, I'm from North Dakota. I don't want to be I guess they're supposed to be what, Vikings fans or Bears fans, but you know, it's an 18-hour drive away. So whatever, go ahead, be a Cowboys fan. If that's what floats your boat. Guys who bug me are Cowboys fans from South Jersey, Cowboys fans from
Buffalo,
from New York, from Buffalo. You know that the governor of former governor of New Jersey, is this guy named Chris Christie.
Chris Christie, sure, yeah. He's one of Jerry's pals.
He's a Cowboys fan.
Yeah.
He's a Cowboys fan. But I'm sorry, you're the governor of New Jersey. It means you're either a Giants fan or an Eagles fan, or if you're sad, you're a Jets fan, okay?
But one of those three. Buffalo you just about take, right?
No, you can't hear Buffalo. Buffalo's at the other end of New York. Buffalo's in Canada. Okay. Buffalo's in another country. He's from New Jersey.
What? He was in Jerry's box when he was governor of New Jersey, right? You saw him high five. Yeah. He's on the high five crew in Jerry's box.
But what, can you conceive of somebody sadder? He's got nothing to do with the Cowboys.
Sure.
And then this is what you're fighting against. You're fighting against this kind of system where people turn their back on their roots, on their history, on the civilization that was brought. You want to talk about this? You want to talk about why the environment's going to hell? Why Greta Thunberg finds herself in this situation? It's Cowboys fans. It's the Cowboys fanification. And again, I say this with the utmost respect. If you're from Dallas, good for you. You're fine. If you're from some weirdo place that doesn't have a team within, hey, that's fine. Not your fault. You're from Fargo. Fine. Okay. But if you're from New Jersey, if you're from Southern California, come on now.
Pick something closer to home. Do you dislike the Cowboys more than any other franchise?
I struggle with that because there are times when the Giants have really bugged the crap out of me.
How so?
Okay, a couple things. Eli. I do not like Eli.
How can you not like Eli?
I dislike
Eli, maybe.
It's funny. I really dislike Eli because he's always has that like weird sad sack expression, like he's about to start crying.
He's quite a chill character, isn't he?
He's not. And it's funny because I like Peyton. I actually met Archie Manning in the lift once. Great guy, great story, right? But Eli kind of stands for that sort of like, you know, he's got a bit of the Prince Andrew to Prince Charles around him. You know, like
he's Andrew and Peyton Manning's.
No,
Prince
it's
Charles.
Worse. He's the other one. Who's the other one? Who's
Edward?
Yes.
He's Prince Edward.
Yes.
Isn't there a third brother?
There's a third brother.
Cooper.
There's
Cooper.
Yes. Okay, well, he can be Anne. I don't know. Maybe I lost the analogy, okay? But you get what I'm saying, right? Well, Eli was always there with that stupid expression on his face.
I quite like, or rather, I will defend quarterbacks who aren't rah-rah, all-American, let's go get him. That's a little differently cut from the norm, from the prototype of how you expect.
He's a Manning. He's football royalty, and you're saying he's cut from the norm.
His demeanor in his he's quite a relaxed, calm character. You talk to players that play with him.
He's so relaxed that like he starts crying and he looks like he's like in pain.
I don't think I've ever seen him cry, but
he's a wuss. Okay. And I don't like him. And I don't, you know, I don't like
who else?
Well, I don't like Tiki Barber. I really did. When I had the thing, right? And it's Tiki and it's that stupid Rondé Barber too, because of course he killed us in that game. And
again,
in the
be
Super
careful
Bowl.
About Rondé Barber. I've played virtual golf with Rondé Barber and he's a stand up guy.
And you're like, my favorite barber was Sean Barber, okay, when it comes to that. But no, but look, I don't know these people, right? No. I'm talking as a fan now, right? I don't like Tiki Barber with a little smug thing. I didn't like him when he went on Fox and stuff, and he's got that little... I don't understand how you can play in the NFL all those years, take so many hits, because I respect Tiki Barber, he's taking so much punishment, and the dude still looks so good.
Right, let's pick the game, Gab. You're picking the Eagles. The Eagles going to get it done at the link.
Well, are we doing this with the line or just in general?
No, do a line if you want, but just in general, they're going to win the game. Don't worry about the line.
I think the line was 5 or something, right?
The line, I think it might come down. Let's have a look at what it is now.
I think it started at 2, opened at 2, and then it went to 5 as soon as Tony Corrente was...
So let's get into Corrente, because you're not happy about... So Tony Corrente is officiating this, and he's got a bit of previous with Eagles fans.
Yeah, the Eagles have a terrible record whenever this guy officiates us. I think the record, I believe, is 2-5, and one of those wins... was against the Bears in the playoffs last year. Remember the double doink, you know, let's face it, Corrente had nothing to do with that, right? So it was really like more of a 1-6 record, and given the Eagles have been pretty good the last couple of years, you're like, yeah. But it is something that people are talking about in Philadelphia, where we like our conspiracy theories, and you know, we kind of figured there's a certain number of referees.
Do you genuinely think
to get this dude?
Corrente officiate is partisan. And is there a difference between him being a not proficient referee versus he is deliberately making calls against the Eagles in some kind of vendetta deeper seated?
I'm speaking as a fan. I don't know enough about this to make any kind of accusations, right? But that is the perception. And I do know that in general, in sports, when there is that perception ahead of time, you know, unless if you have other referees that you can choose, you choose somebody else who's not going to go and fuel that
controversial pick. Sure, yeah.
And fuel that perception. You know, it goes back to remember when Dean Blandino was on Jerry Jones's party. Yeah, remember when he was just be a referee. Remember when he was on like Jerry Jones's party or whatever. You know, like it's that kind of crap. Like, why go and fuel this?
Yes,
you know,
the line incidentally, as of recording this. Today on Friday around lunchtime, 1.5.
Oh, so it's come back down again.
Yeah.
Ooh, must be those Dak Prescott. Let's hope he's unwell.
I think it must be to do with the Prescott thing. So maybe there's more to that than meets the eye. The backup quarterback. Can you name the Cowboys' current backup quarterback?
I have no idea. Who is it?
It is Cooper Rush. So things could be looking good for you if Dak is not at the races. So, who are you picking? Or you're allowed a pass if you want. If you think it's going to jinx, it'll be bad luck. So I'll give you a pass.
No, I got it. I almost always pick. I think I've picked us to win every game this season except for two. So I will take this.
I, Gab, I would love to see Philly win this game. And I'm not just saying that because you're in the room. I think it would, particularly now, Cowboys fans after last week are so confident that they found their mojo, overlooking what has happened in the previous few weeks. It is baffling that they were so good in that game, but then the Rams have been equally Jekyll and Hyde. So I think Philly might get it done, because I think Prescott is critical, of course. And I think that pressure factor that we talked about, given everything we know about this incarnation of the Cowboys, I think they'll just feel it. I think those fans are good on their back. If you can get some offense going early on and they've got to chase the game a bit, I can just see it all unraveling for them. So I'm liking Philly as well.
And right, it's a good argument. Look, you can distill it down to it's a battle of the redheaded quarterbacks, right?
But
Carson Wentz versus Jason Garrett.
Okay.
One of them has God on his side and the Saints and Apostles backing up from behind. Mm. The other one is a dark soul, dark-hearted Jason Garrett.
I love that argument. So, one more thing on Philly, and then we'll move on to some of the other games. Would you take Nick Foles back?
No.
Why not?
Because
as a backup.
Well, there's no point in him as a backup. Why? You have to pay these guys so much money. Because I think he's just so different.
Cap space.
He's so different from Wentz.
Yeah.
When we need the cap space to pay Ertz, apparently, as I discovered now. But I don't, you know, I will forever be grateful. The play will be there forever. I don't want to see him come back and somehow spoil that in any way. And
like that band that should never get back together for the reunion tour, just
exactly.
Leave it.
You know, we've been there, we've done that. Let's move on.
Let's move on to your beloved New England Patriots hosting the Bills at Foxborough, and of course could be a critical game as far as not just the seeds in the AFC are concerned, but the division as well. It's a sneaky outside chance that the Bills could still take the AFC East. A lot of people like the Bills for the upset here, because although New England won fairly convincingly last week against the Bengals, it was the Bengals, and let's not read too much into that. And your friend Edelman, injury concerns there.
Oh, such a shame.
You're gutted about that, I'm sure. Can the Bills pull off the upset win?
I'm going to say yes, hopefully, because I thought the Bills, they played us tougher than... and it was early in the year, but they played us tougher than I expected, so yes.
6-1 on the road, Buffalo. I wonder, I just think the Patriots will have enough for them. N'Keal Harry, the rookie receiver that they drafted, the first round receiver that Belichick's ever drafted, of course, connected with Brady, came good last week. So they're using White out the backfield quite effectively. And I think the defense will just be too much for, this is my concern with Buffalo, and it's not exactly the hottest of hot takes or rocket science. I'm just not buying the variation in their offense. And I think if you look at Belichick's MO, which is to take out the key weapon or the key angle offensively that they're facing, which is Josh Allen's running, I think there isn't enough in this Buffalo offense to deal with this, in particular, Patriots secondary. So I think they will smother them in that way and they won't get enough going. So even though this Patriots offense is indifferent, it will have enough to win at home. The line, incidentally, on this is crazy low, the over-under line. It's like 38.5, something. So Vegas suggesting that it's going to be a
defensive battle.
Yes, indeed. Rams 49ers. So that's getting interesting. Of course, the battle in the – well, it's been interesting for most of the season, the battle in the NFC West. And the Rams probably at best will play spoiler now. I was looking at 538, the stats site, and their percentage chance of making the playoffs now are very slim. I think it's under 10%, the Rams making the playoffs now. But they can mix things up as far as the 49ers and the Seahawks are concerned. What, in your mind, has changed with the Rams year on year, looking so electric last time around? I know the Super Bowl, they didn't show up, but apart from that, they were one of the most exciting teams to watch. This year, they've been much more indifferent.
I don't know enough about it. I do think that, oh God, what's his name? The coach who got all that, like, oh, he's so smart, he's so clever. Mm. You know, I think I still feel a bit of Schadenfreude there. Mm. And I think experience matters perhaps more than people sometimes realize, in the sense that in terms of achieving the continuity, again, this isn't just in the NFL.
Sustain.
But to sustain it, especially in a sport where there's so much natural transition with the cap, with injuries, with all these, with the role that drafting plays, all these things, I think suggests that it's, unless you've got a tremendous staff and a tremendous organization behind you, that is a very, very big burden, I think, on a coach.
Ravens and Browns, interesting game because the Ravens pretty much locked and loaded the number one seed. The Patriots can still pip them, but again, it's unlikely. So it looks like home field advantage for the Ravens. What have you made of them this season? The story of the season, of course, they're the hot team going into the playoffs, not as we often see the team that is the one with the most attention during the regular season and the most hype going into the playoffs. Often we see them falling short when it comes to the crunch. Do you think it's going to be different this time around? This Ravens side is, given the fact the AFC is more straightforward than the NFC, has got enough to keep it rolling to the championship game and beyond.
So I kind of wanted the Ravens to be bad this year because I liked Flacco.
Yeah.
But then,
see, this is, you don't like Eli, but you like Flacco.
Yeah, but you know, Flacco didn't play us all the time.
Fair enough.
You know, among other things, and you know, Flacco doesn't have an older brother. You know, who
well, he might
who is a god of football. Yeah, we might do as far as we know. But we don't know who he is. Sure. But I find the Ravens incredibly likable, and I like the fact that they're doing things differently. Mm. I don't think. What I like about the quarterback too is he doesn't run. People say like, you know,
that's all he's about.
But he doesn't run like a running back. Like he's, you know, he's got the efficiencies and stuff to do that. But I always feel like he's got an awareness around him when you see him play that running backs don't have because it's not what they're trained to do. So I'm going to go with the Ravens here.
Just a quick light on the Browns and coaching. So Freddie Kitchens has come in. Getting bumped up from coordinator role. He's got that whole good old boy demeanor. And every NFL locker room has a collection of superstars because that's the way the league is built, unlike, say, La Liga or the Premier League, where it's top heavy, right? It's
right.
Equally spread, roughly speaking, right, in the NFL. But it feels like this Browns side has, because I guess of Baker being quite an outspoken character, Odell Beckham just has a lot of attention and baggage around him, and he courts, I think, speculation. He could easily put certain rumors to bed, but doesn't, and maybe that's his people, maybe that's him, I don't know, but there are a lot of other big names in this locker room as well. Is Freddie Kitchens the wrong character to manage that? And bringing that towards football, you take, and I'm not trying to make too glib or trite a comparison, but and correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but one of the reasons behind the success of, say, Zidane and Real Madrid was because he was able to manage this collection of egos. And it feels like Cleveland at the moment have a lot of egos in that room. So do you need a certain type of coach in the NFL to handle that?
I mean, I think you obviously do need a guy who can handle the egos. What I would say, though, one of the key differences is that in football, you have... The stars actually probably matter more. So, you know, you mentioned Zidane and Real Madrid. Mm. You got to keep Cristiano Ronaldo happy. And the power dynamic is different in football because, yeah, Odell Beckham, fantastic, important. But there's a whole half of the game that he's not involved in when your defense is out there. You got to get somebody who can get him the ball consistently. You need people around him who can run the right patterns and whatever. So the power structure is inevitably geared towards a coach. There's very few, I mean, it might be slightly different with quarterbacks, but I don't think there's any position player that can approach the influence that a top player would have in football. And so, yeah, you want to keep all the egos happy, but prima donnas tend not to last in the NFL unless, you know, they've got Brady or Manning throwing them the ball or handing it up. You know what I mean? Like,
to that level. What do you make of Freddie Kitchens in the Pittsburgh Started It t-shirt? If you were an Eagles fan if the Eagles had done that and Peterson came out with that, would you have liked that, or would you have thought, oh God, what are you doing?
Well, Peterson wouldn't, obviously, because he's a man of God, but
sure.
I have no problem. It's the kind of stuff. I mean, Buddy Ryan would have done that.
Yeah, Buddy Ryan definitely would have done it.
And
Dick would have done it.
Yeah, there's no, you know, you think it has to fit your personality. If you can back it up, But he could back it up.
This is the problem with the Cleveland, right? Though not, you know, Baker Mayfield. That is his problem, absolutely distilled down to he hasn't done anything yet. He hasn't. And his supporters, apologists, will say, "Well, this is what you get with Baker Mayfield. It will come together eventually."
Yeah, but it's not Baker Mayfield who wore the.
No, sweater, I know, but backing it up is my point. That if you're gonna, he has behaved a lot in his relatively short NFL career with far too much moxie in presses and. Just winding up opposition vets, and you know you haven't done anything yet.
Yeah.
So you gotta. Yeah, if you rolled in first 3 years in the NFL and landed a Super Bowl or an MVP, fair enough. Lamar Jackson wouldn't do it because he's not that kind of guy. But if he did, if he started behaving like that on the podium, fair enough.
I think I always think back to that great Kid Rock quote, you know, from the song Cocky.
I often draw Kid Rock inspiration from Kid Rock.
Yeah.
What's the quote?
Probably can't say one of the words, but it says, you know, it ain't bragging and something if you back it up, you know, and
I would wear that on a t-shirt.
You know?
I always had you pegged as a Kid Rock fan. Well, I knew it. One more for the road. I just want to get your perspective on this.
Sorry, but we do agree that Kid Rock, one of the top three acts ever from Detroit.
From Detroit, yeah.
I mean, the contemporary guys, obviously, you know, go back down to Motown, but, you know, you would have Eminem and ICP ahead of him.
Kid Rock, you can call me Tex on the Sunset Strip with a bottle of Beck's. Yeah. one of the great couplets.
Actually, isn't Madonna from Detroit?
No idea. But Kid Rock, I would like to see.
Madonna fan here nodding along.
I'd like to Kid Rock. Who would you like? Who's your dream?
We still put Kid Rock ahead of Madonna, right?
Super Bowl halftime show at the moment, in terms of current artists. Who would you like to see?
Yeah, see, I don't like much music after Jane's Addiction.
Jane's Addiction, Mark Cotty. We've got to have a separate
music. You know, I'm...
Music pod spin-off. That is a great shout. Perry Farrell at the halftime show would be unlikely, but... unlikely he'll get booked, but amazing. Or you might see Jane's Addiction with... You know, the way they love to do this now, where you just double down with that, where they wheel that slash to prop up the Black Eyed Peas. So you could do.
I like that cross pollination. Somebody like who'd be like the least likely person to play with, like Jane's Addiction, like
J Lo
or Celine Dion.
Celine Dion, Jane's.
Yeah, that would do it.
As long as David Lynch directed the halftime show, that would be the greatest halftime show ever. We're out of time, Mark Cotty. Apologies if we haven't picked your games, but hey, that is how Harry, the producer, cracks the whip. We're going to be in deep trouble if we don't get out of Dodge pretty soon. It's great to catch up and talk football with you.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm sorry I'm sort of monosomatic when it comes to the Eagles, but this is my outlet. I can't be a fan in my day job, so this is it, man. Bleed Eagles green.
We will love to have you back to talk more Eagles and appreciate your time. A lot of our listeners will follow your work as well. But if there's anything you want to plug podcast-wise?
Yes, listen to the Gab and Jules show. We're on every Monday. Julian Lawrence is also an NFL fan,
yes,
although
he is.
In a very French way. Like, you know,
who's Julian's team?
I think he kind of... I wouldn't be doing the podcast. It would just be the Gab show if you were... But yes, he dips in and out. He's more of an NBA guy.
Yes, he is.
But
right.
he's across everything. And also, we do the Serie Awesome podcast with Mina Rizzucchi and Nikki Banditti.
Nikki, of course,
is a legit NFL person. I think you've had her on, right?
Regular on this show.
Many times. Yes, she's one of those people who like nerds out watching game film, you know, like on like how you can get the,
knows her stuff.
What do they call it? The coaches tape or something?
Yeah, the coaches film.
Yeah. I could imagine her like on the train from Brighton watching that.
You should do that, Gab. You'd enjoy that. Just watching, deep diving some of that film.
Well, it's funny, but there's Eagles bloggers who do that, who go and
break down plays and.
And again, I go back, you know how like, I go back to the football I cover for a living, but. You know, oh, look, a rights violations. Oh, you put this clip on Twitter, right? I mean, they've become kind of less fascist about it now. But in the NFL, it's kind of a free for all.
Yeah.
And it's the best possible marketing tool. So, you know, you can have some nerd going and breaking out film for people who are into that. You can have another guy doing sort of like, you know, highlight reel catches at the helmet, whatever. All this stuff.
Funnies and yeah.
There's one of the, Unfortunately, he went to Princeton, but he's one of the good guys. There's a guy named Ross Tucker.
Oh, sure. We know Ross well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of when he comes on and when he explains stuff that, like, offensive linemen do all the stuff that, you know, I don't know. I just see these big dudes, yeah, like, trying to stop, like, these angry dudes from coming through. But you develop, like, an appreciation for it.
For
and,
sure.
And yeah, so there's ton of material out there that people can look at. But yes, you can listen to Gavin Jules on Monday and the Sarri Awesome podcast.
It's a done deal. McCarty, good to see you, man. McCarty, yourself.
My pleasure.
Lovely stuff from McCarty. We will definitely have him back in the house. And hopefully, as far as he's concerned, when the Eagles are in the playoffs and rolling deep, which they might just manage to do once again. Stranger things have happened. Now, get involved with our daily fantasy listener league, courtesy of our friends at Paddy Power Fantasy. This weekend, it's free to enter. You know the drill by now, gang. Free to enter. You get to spend 60,000 fictional pounds on your team, and points mean prizes. So cash awards to those teams with the most points. Free to enter. Get involved. Head to Paddy Power Fantasy. Find the links on our social media channels at The NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and in the blurb to this pod. We're back on Monday with Iron Mike. It's a Christmas special, which means we'll be reviewing all the weekend's action, and we'll have Iron Mike's top five as well. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you Monday. Bye for now.